Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here and Chad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend's edition. It's going to be 2 hours of the weekend show because Al is taking a little break this week. So in the second hour, we are going to replay some of the, I think, more important company updates that we recorded on this week. Because look, there's a lot of news coming out of the resource sector. Even as I know we're going through another painful correction. Companies are still doing stuff, and if you want to be buying stocks, you need to be doing your research right now. Chad and I are kicking off the show with Jayant Bhandari, private investor and consultant to a lot of the big money players within this sector. Jayant, we have to start with the precious metals. In full disclosure, we are recording this about halfway through the trading day on Thursday, and it's not a good day for precious metals investors. Gold is down about $40, sitting right around that $17.50 level. Silver is down over a dollar today, sitting right in that $22 level. Overall, Jayant, look, the sector, especially when it comes to the gold and silver prices, it's been relatively boring. Gold was stuck pretty much at that $1,800 level for about 3 months. Now we're getting a bit more of a sell-off, but still, the sector's been slow. The mood is pretty depressed and stocks continue to get hit. What's your takeaway from broadly the weakness in the precious metal sector that we continue to see?
Well, Corey, I am euphoric right now, and I have always been euphoric when the stock prices fall so much. Gold has fallen by 2 or 3%. It's no big deal for me. I think gold does that all the time, but stock prices have fallen by, some of the prices that I'm looking at have fallen by 10-15%. And that clearly is a place where I want to invest because that's where the easiest and best money is made. And I am always amused that people are fearful in this market when I'm actually euphoric, when you can actually do quite well by just not letting emotions take over your rational thinking.
Well, Jayant, when you see these kind of pressure squeezes and a lot of the sentiment gets so negative, but then some of these stocks, like we've even seen major sell-off by high single digits or double digits. Do you like to scale into positions during that time frame? Do you like to wait to see that the dust settles first? You know, how do you approach doing some bottom fishing in these kind of scenarios?
I don't think you can predict when the dust will settle, because in retrospect, you can always think that you knew what was going to happen. But if you could actually see into the future, you would have corrected your actions based on the future. So a lot of analysis that people try to do about how market behaves is looking at curves in retrospect, but really you can't predict the future. When I see value, I basically want to go into it. Now, I do know that today is a depressed market, so all my buy prices have been reduced by 10% or so. And I know that one company did get filled this morning, and more will get filled as the market comes to a close today. So yes, I do want to exploit the bearishness in the market, but the market can become more bearish tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. I'm not going to wait for that. I'm just going to exploit the 10-15% extra upside that I can get by buying those stocks today.
Okay, it does sound like you're also lowering some of your purchase prices too, right? So maybe even waiting for a little bit more weakness. Overall though, Jayant, look, the sector is pretty unloved right now. I wasn't able to go down to any of these recent conferences, whether it's Beaver Creek or Denver Gold due to some of the restrictions, but you were there. What can you tell us about your takeaways from those conferences and what the attendance was like, what the mood was like?
I am still in Colorado Springs, where Denver Gold Show ended yesterday afternoon, and it was pretty dead, actually. In most of the speeches, I saw no more than, let's say, 10 people in the auditorium. Usually, those halls are packed with standing-only space. That much is the change that I have seen in Denver Gold Show. On the last day, yesterday afternoon, I probably saw maybe 5 to 10 people in totality walking around, the same 5 to 10 people. So there was not much of an audience at Denver Gold Show. And so was the case in Beaver Creek, although I think Beaver Creek had more people who are risk takers and who wanted to make sure they attended the conference. But it's still in the auditoriums of Beaver Creek Show. You would see often a completely empty hall. They would still give their speech because those speeches were telecast live, I think, and they were recorded. But it was quite a strange for speakers to be welcoming people when there was no one in the audience.
I bet that would be strange. Now, Giant, we have seen this environment before. I remember going to some of these conferences when it was dead. And unfortunately, that didn't necessarily mark the bottom because we had a prolonged period of sideways, boring trading in the sector. When do you start to get a little bit more worried that maybe the market won't bounce back as fast and maybe it will be unloved for a prolonged period of time?
Well, I actually don't worry. I make sure that I have at least 1 or 2 years worth of cash with me. And as long as the market is undervalued from my perspective, I go to sleep in peace. I have almost never worried about fall in share prices, except when I was in using margin. I have stopped using margin to buy stocks for now many years, and that has actually made it possible to get a good sleep and not worry when the stock prices fall. And I have actually almost always been able to benefit from these shocks that we see in the market. In fact, I can sometimes use up my cash and, you know, buy something today and sell the same thing for a 30 or 40% profit within the next week or two. So these are the kinds of markets that I like to benefit from rather than to lose in.
Yeah, sometimes it can make for very nice swing trades indeed, Giant. One other thing that catches my attention when people go to conferences is sometimes you get to have those good one-on-ones or discussion with management or chat at a bar, chat at a restaurant. Did you come away with any companies that caught your eye that you thought, hey, these may be some good ones? I'm sure you found some companies that looked interesting while you were there.
So I've been coming to Denver Gold Show for the last 15 years. I have been to every single Beaver Creek show, except for the first one. So yes, I have benefited hugely from coming to these conferences. Particularly the Beaver Creek show is extraordinarily good for me because I look at junior mining companies, and Jessica and Karen do an absolutely outstanding job of organizing that conference. I have in these 15 years never come back thinking there were so many opportunities in the market. I have in front of me at least 10 names that I want to, all new names actually, that I want to spend more time on over the next few days. So I'm going to be very busy for the next couple of weeks analyzing those companies, trying to understand them. And a lot of these names are actually surprisingly development stage companies, and they, at least on the first pass basis, look reasonably cheap to me.
So, Giant, what are some of the names? Can you share some of the companies that you chatted with that you think are interesting?
Let's look at a company called Moneta Gold. It's trading at $1.80. It's, I think, lowest in the last several months. And the funny thing is that they recently acquired Garrison Project from O3 Mining. And now they will be able to explore in between the two projects, and they will be able to use economies of scale. Now, the market seems to have not given them any benefit for the economies of scale that has come up and the extra resources that they will be able to look for within the boundaries of these two projects. So this is the benefit that I think the market has missed out on. This will be one of the biggest gold projects in Canada. And my first pass thinking is that at 175 million market capitalization and looking at the old PEA and what might be the new PEA tells me that this company might have a nice, decent upside. Similarly, there's another company called Artemis Gold. The ticker is ARTG. It's trading at $5.50 Canadian. They have a huge market capitalization, $800 million. So maybe there is a less limited upside left in that company. But again, if you look closely at what they have achieved with just basic redrawing of the design of the project, they were able to generate massive amount of value in the market in a mere few days after they had acquired the project. Hundreds of millions of dollar worth of new value in market capitalization terms. But I think there's still upside left. There's another company that I met called Prime Mining. Again, all these companies I have never really looked at in any details in the past, but I'm going to spend more time. But my first pass impression has been extremely good. Prime Mining has very, very good oxidized ore grade in Mexico. It is trading at $500,000, and I think the company is headed for a multi-million ounce deposit. And if this continues to be oxidized grade, which will give them fabulous recoveries, I mean, this can be a very, very profitable project. A lot of people worry that 1.3 might not be a high enough grade, but it might not be a high enough grade for fresh rock, for oxidized grade. This is an extreme, this can become an extremely profitable project. I have a lot more names, Shad and Corey.
Well, I'm sure we'll touch on some of those in future interviews, but now I do want to move it over to the uranium sector, because that has been the standout, outperforming resource sector, especially when it comes to the stocks. That's been the one real, in a way, surprising aspect, is that now, finally, the uranium price is starting to play catch-up, but these stocks have been on a run for months now. Look, there's a number of different stories that we can get to within uranium that is causing this rise in the uranium price. But what's your takeaway from the run that we have seen in what is a relatively small resource sector, uranium?
Well, I don't get excited about this feeding frenzy when this happens. My tendency is to sell and get out of that market. But in fact, I have never been too excited about the uranium sector. There is a lot of greed and lust in the market, which makes people think that they can understand and foresee the future of uranium market better than what buyers can see. Now, if buyers were buying uranium for $30, $35 a pound, which is actually a very small part of their total cost structure, and if they knew that they would be facing deficit of uranium in the future, why would they not have gone into long-term contracts early enough? And the reason long-term contracts haven't really gone up much and they weren't too high in the past was because buyers themselves probably see enough uranium coming their way at a reasonably good price. So these retail investors, people who don't really understand the nitty-gritty of the uranium sector, think that they can foresee the future better, but they are mostly driven not by mathematical skills or proper analysis, but mostly driven by greed and lust. And I want to stay away from market where greed is dominating the sector.
Well, Giant, there's a lot of people that have opined on this, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's people that bring on the uranium mining company CEOs, and or even people that are some of the people that actually follow, like the UEX and like the people that do the pricing, which is very opaque in the uranium industry. And they said that there's a disconnect in the utility companies thinking that there was a lot more supply versus the reality that there really wasn't as much supply, and it's hard to bring these uranium mines back online. So it looks like the narrative has been a lot of people fed these miners to higher levels and bid them up because they believe that that contracting cycle is about to start and that it would need to be in the 50s or 60s for these companies to actually incentivize new production. So some of this is in people's minds front running that eventuality that will, and on top of that, all the buying that there's been in the spot market mopping that up. So what do you think of that narrative that maybe the utility companies are a little bit behind the eight ball and they're going to have to come to the table with the mining companies, and that's what's behind some of this move?
Oh, that is entirely possible, Shad. But I talk with a lot of traders in commodities, and they often tell me that they, when they do contracts, they actually, when they buy and sell as mediators, they do future selling when they buy something at spot right away. They don't wait for any time at all. So when the real buyers, the real suppliers, and the real traders can't predict the price, who am I as an outsider in the uranium buying and selling supply chain to think that I know better than the buyers and suppliers. Now, I'm not saying that uranium prices won't go up. Maybe it can go up to $100 a pound, and it did go up to 150 pounds or something a decade back, which in real time terms is now worth maybe about $200 a pound. So yes, uranium price can go up to a lot of a lot higher, and it is entirely possible for uranium using companies to pay a lot more money because cost of uranium is a minor part of their demand cost structure. But at the same time, you must remember that a lot of uranium projects have been stalled and they can come online very quickly if the price sustained pricing, long-term spot prices actually do go up. But you must also remember that a lot of countries are actually closing down their uranium projects. If you look at how much uranium production has grown over the last few decades, you realize that in terms of electricity generation, uranium-based production of electricity has mostly been stagnant. It has fallen for virtually every country as a percentage of their total electricity production. So all this euphoria about uranium is ill-founded. People don't really understand that, yes, uranium electricity-producing plants are cheap to run, but they are extremely, extremely, extremely expensive to build. And the liabilities associated with running a uranium plant are either huge or negated by regulations, which are both anti-free market things. And people don't really understand that fully. But again, when you are greedy, you ignore what your greed does not like.
Yeah, you raised some good points there, Giant. And I think it's still about 20% of the U.S. electric grid and about 15% of the global grid. But you bring up a good point that if the price does rise, let's say it gets to 50 or 60, which is the incentive price to bring on new production, and that production comes online, where's the upside from there? So one other question, though. A lot of people focus on the spot market, and really that's not what moves the dial for the producers. It's the contracts. But in the spot market, the big news of the last really month has been the Sprott Uranium Trust taking over the Uranium Participation Corp, and they've been going in and buying with both hands in the spot market, mopping up that, you know, supply that a lot of hedge funds would use or that some uranium buyers would use to then sell to utilities. Do you think that that continued bid from the Sprott Trust and even from some of the non-producing companies, about a half dozen have also bought in the open markets, do you think that that will continue to have any effect, or is that more of a flash in the pan news of the day?
Well, I think I would consider that to be a flash in the pan news of the day. Remember, those people who are supposed to be buyers have to keep buying if their stock prices trade at a premium to what they own within their portfolio. So, this is the problem with division of labor. This is what they do, and they want to think, and they want to make other people think that the future is euphoric for uranium. But at the same time, when the time comes for them to sell uranium in the market, remember, market will have that extra supply, and that will be a problem for the price of uranium. So, you know, this can turn around and hurt you in the future. I don't go by what these, Sprott Uranium or UPC does. A lot of people I have seen, they don't really, they are not users of uranium, and they are very likely to make a mistake in their projections, particularly when their job requires them to expect higher price of uranium. So their incentive is to believe that uranium prices will go up. I don't want to play that game. I just want to play safe so that I can stay in the market in the long run.
All right. Hey, Giant, I see eye to eye with you in terms of a lot of this run in uranium. You know what? The stocks have run really nicely, and there has been some big buyers step into the market, but you're right. Those buyers need to stay in the market, and they need to keep on buying if we want price to keep on going. So we'll see where it all goes, but at least it has been a good sector for resource investors, because a lot of other sectors, we keep on hearing just how on sale those stocks are. Uranium stocks, at least it's been a different story. It's more fun in a bull market when stocks are going up, right? Giant, we're going to wrap it up here. It's always great chatting with you, buddy. Thank you for taking the first two segments of this weekend show. We'll chat again in another few weeks. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you very much, Corey and Chad.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.